Good evening. This is Rabbi Mayevsky. We have just today, obviously, we were Simchas Torah. I hope everybody had a very joyous holiday. We had a wonderful Simchas Torah, some nice hakafas, good kiddush, camaraderie, and we learned a lot today. My father often told me that it's unfortunate that Zos HaBracha gets swept under the carpet because we lain it on Zos HaBracha. It's one of the most important parshas. And we sort of like glance over it because we don't have a regular Shabbos for it and not enough is spoken about it. But what we see is the life of Moshe Rabbeinu has come to a close. And what we see is also the last eight psukim. This is going to be about Bereishis, of course, but the leading into it, and I think it's very relevant why we finish Zos HaBracha. For the obvious reasons, of course, we start Bereishis right away because we never end and not start again anytime we finish a Masechta. That's how we operate, so that we are always in the midst of something. And that's very important in our lives. We never go without it being in the middle of something, so that hopefully God lets us complete what we've begun. And that's the main reason. But nevertheless, it's a very interesting factor here that we see the life of Moshe Rabbeinu come to a close. And for that reason as well, the last eight psukim in the Torah, well, even though we have the entire Chamisha Chumshei Torah, we have a law of Shnayim Mikra V'yecha Targum, when if the person who has Chosin Torah, they read Miona Elokei Kedem until the end of the parasha, but the last eight psukim, you don't lean along with the Balkore, because that was, it starts from Vayomos Moshe Eved Hashem. The question is, did Moshe, there is a lot of machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and others who wrote the last eight psukim. Moshe died, but the Abravanel says that's not a problem whatsoever, among other people as well, the Ibn Ezra. That's not a problem whatsoever, because the Torah talks about Moshe. If you take a look in the Chumash, there's a lot of future written in there. God just told him what to write, and he wrote, even though things had not even happened in the life of Moshe. Things happen way in the future, but he wrote it down in the Torah. We see that in many of the ancestries that were written and the offshoots of those future events. So that's not an issue. That Moshe just wrote what God told him, and that was plain and simple, very good, because it's very difficult to start speculating whether Yoshua wrote the last eight psukim. But getting away from that, the entire Torah, especially this parasha at the beginning of Bereishis, spans a total of 2,488 years from Bereishis, I mean, from the time that Adam Marishan was born, we'll call it, because we don't want to get into the object of time, the discussion of time here, but from the time of Adam Marishan until Moshe Rabbeinu was 2,488 years. In that time, this first parasha in the Torah deals with almost an entire 1,600 years are already passed over in this parasha by itself. The flood is in the year 1656, and right away we lose over 1,500 years in this parasha alone, and yet the other four chumashim, Shemos, Vayikra, Bamidbar, and Devarim, are all over the space of only 40 years. It's amazing how what happened is, and that's why I wanted to say a life well lived. The people in the beginning of Bereishis, their lives were an absolute zero. But even during the life of Adam Marishon, from the time the first sin was committed, and generations after that began to descend to the depths of depravity, one generation after another. As it says at the end of the parasha, V'chol Yetzer Machshavot Libo, Rak Rak Kol Hayom. All the people were doing with all the time that God gave them was thinking of things to do, not thinking of things to accomplish, but just things to do to make the world a worse place than it is. It's just descending. And of course, we could see in our own lives today various other times, which is why God had to diminish and decrease the number of years that people would live in the future. Now, the interesting thing is we say, what happened at the beginning when God created Adam, and we have at the end Hanafilim. The point is very simple, that when God created Adam Marishon, if we want to say that God created Adam Marishon, that he would live forever, then it's not unusual to think that man could live 1,000 years, because let's face it, if I were to manufacture something and I would want it to last a long time, I would try to manufacture with best materials possible and put it in the best environment possible. And that's why when if I would make something from silver, but I could make it better from gold, or if the iron could be improved by using other alloys or something, I would do something that I would want it to last long. And since God initially, his intention was to make other Marishon to last forever, perhaps, we're not sure, there's a machlokas about that, and we'll get into that in a minute. But then I would make him 100% perfect as best as I can, and give him a diet that would prevent him from getting his body ruined in any way, shape, or form, put him in a climate which would be conducive to living a long life, and that is exactly what God did. First he created the Gan Eden, and then he created other Marishon when he was living elsewhere. And then it says, and he put him, after Adam was created, he placed him in Gan Eden for the best result, so to speak, and told him only to eat. He gave him what we call Eitz Hagana Chol Tochel, and that's what he gave him to eat. He fed him all the things that we were only meant to eat, vegetables, fruits and vegetables, what God intended. And when we eat flesh, unfortunately, I'm not a vegetarian myself, obviously, but the point is, what the Abarbanel is making the point over here is saying that the minute we begin to eat meat, our body begins to deteriorate. It rots our insides, and basically, and we have the different weather patterns, and that begins to diminish our lifespan and all these other things that happen that change our life, the distractions that we have, and that what leads us to the whole idea of the Eitz Hadas. Now, what was the purpose of the Eitz Hadas? Why would God put it there in the first place? Obviously, we think that Adam HaRishon was a perfect specimen, but the reality is he had Bechira from day one. Otherwise, he wouldn't have had to tell him not to eat from the Eitz Hadas. But B'soch HaGon, what was the supposed to be with the Eitz Hadas? In fact, even the snake that got Chava to eat it, how did that happen? Did the snake speak? Of course, it says, Vayomer HaNachosh El Ho'isha. And it seems to indicate that he spoke, but that's not necessarily true. A lot of times we might express an event by saying somebody said something to me, but not necessarily spoke to me, but he showed me by his action. And what do I mean by that? It's expressed the fact that the snake ate himself. He took himself and he ate from the Eitz Hadas himself. And when Chava saw that the snake ate from the Eitz Hadas and he didn't die, so the point being, at that point when she saw that he didn't die, so she decided, and whatever transpired exactly, we're unsure, but we're being led into that direction certainly to formulate the thought process as it's expressed certainly very plainly in the Chumash, that the snake spoke to her and tried to induce her, to convince her to eat, and says, you see, you said that I shouldn't touch it, and now I touch. But I just wanted to juxtapose Moshe Rabbeinu. The last 40 years of his life, he spent every day was so jam-packed with everything. And here from the day that man is created, he wasted away his life. In fact, on the Marishon after the Chet or Ishon, after he ate from the Eitz Hadas, so the point being over here, he was convinced by his wife, Oslo, God said, Ezer Kenegdo, he gave her a helpmate. He gave him a helpmate. And so why would she do that to him? Why would she even do it? What was the point? And of course, the Mefarshim tell us that this was the Eitz Hadas, was the point of Mishkol, of having too much involvement in relations unnecessarily. And that's why Adam and Chava had two sons initially, and after that, when he saw, he separated from his wife 130 years until Chase was born, when he realized that for the betterment of the world, for the world to continue. But Adam HaRishon, his genes passed on through Chase, and they lived a long life, but they keep on diminishing. And of course, we see in next week's parasha, when people begin to eat meat, their lifespans diminish tremendously. But the point being here is that look how we juxtapose the life of Moshe, how much of, we took four chumashim just to discuss And even in those 40 years, we're really only discussing in the four chumashim that where Moshe was born, only approximately 3 years of his life we're discussing in those, all of those few chumashim that we have. In the first parasha alone, a quarter of the whole world's existence passes by, because if we take a look of all the people who lived even up to 500, 600, 700, 800, and 969 years, it only says they were born, they lived, and they died. They were born, they lived, and they died, and they accomplished nothing. They had no designs, no life desires to better the world in any way, shape, or form. They have too much time on their hands. V'chol yetzer machshavos libo rak ra kol hayom. So God diminished the life until we get to the point, the optimum, it would seem, would be 120 years. We realize that a man, if he knows that his days are numbered, will attempt to leave his mark on the world, will attempt to make something of his life, to leave something behind, to leave a legacy, which is a very important thing. Moshe Rabbeinu was the quintessential person who made his life count. The Avos made their life count to the best of their ability. But Moshe Rabbeinu was the prime example of all of this, and that's why we discuss his life. And he was the fact that he spent so much of his time in Shemayim. He divested himself of all human pleasure in his whole life, and that would extend his lifespan. And that's why at the end of his life was lo chos oino, lo nos lechov, lo chos oino. He was able to do everything, see things from beginning to end, all the way till the end. His eyesight wasn't diminished, his strength wasn't diminished, because he took himself in hand. The original people over here, even though they carried on, their climate was certainly perfect, but God realized that they were chasing things, their desires, they let their desires rule their life. So that's what it means, they let their eyes be ruled by their heart and not their brain. And that's what we've mentioned so many times when we read Koheles this week, and it says, Chacham Einov Berosho. It doesn't mean we all know that everybody's eyes are in their head, but the fact remains, what we want to do is, before you do something, think of the consequences. And if one person is going to live so long, he's going to live 700-800 years, he's not necessarily thinking of the consequences. All he's doing is looking to have a good time, and rather than make his mark on the world. And of course, there's the major example, the major machlokas is, as we'll see next week, but we're left with that thought process in the last, one of the last, or the last pasuk in the parsha, when it says, V'noach matzachem b'inei Hashem. What does that tell us right there? That even Noah himself didn't do much up to that point in time to make the world a better place, and even Noah did not deserve to be saved. The only saving grace that Noah had, that God decided to save him, was the Noah Motza Chain. He had a certain charm, he had a certain grace that God liked something about him, that he was a charmer, we'll say, and God liked him for that reason. Doesn't say anywhere at this point in time that he was a tzaddik. Of course, in next week's parsha, we have the machlokas that's brewing rather than that. But the genes passed on were so great that it was diminished very slowly through the years. From Adam and Chase, they had these perfect genes, and that carried on. And that's why all these people were giants. And when we get to the end of the parsha, when it says, Anafilim hayu ba'aris vayomim ahem, giants. And of course, there's a major machlokas on what that means, the word Nephilim. What does that mean? And there's speculation to say Anafilim, because if they were married, the women that were normal-sized women would have a giant in the womb. They wouldn't be able to carry the baby full term, and they would have premature birth. So therefore, the symbolism is that they fell out of the womb at 6 or 7 months, but they were just as large as a full-formed baby, because the womb couldn't hold a child, the fetus, for a full term. It just was too large for the average-sized woman, which was a very amazing thought process at that point. and that's why they're called Hanafilim. They fell out because there was no room for them to exist. Of course, I was asked today, which the Gemara discusses, why the Torah begins with the letter Bereishis, and that's, of course, because it's closed on three sides and only tells us to look forward. And that's what we neglect to do. We're too interested sometimes. You have scientists are trying to find out how the world was created, and that's what the Torah doesn't want us to do. Of course, in the Gemara Chagig on Ein Darshan, it says, you know, that you can't look backwards. You can't understand it. Of course, we're trying science, but the average person, the average brain span, the average brain comprehension could not, you know, we live within the framework of our own brain comprehension, what we could handle. As we know that the world was created in so many different ways, and the thought process is, even amazing as it is, how did Adam learn to speak? Imagine, you know, every child, we have our own children, the great miracles, if we think on a most basic basis, that a child learns to speak by hearing his parents and the people around him speak, and he learns language. But who taught Adam language? When he spoke the minute he was born, how did he speak? What did he speak? And that's right away right there. So God had to teach him everything right from the beginning. From birth, he had the ability to speak and then converse with his wife, Chava. All these little things are so incredulous. And one thing that the Abravanel mentions, which is also a very incredulous thing, is some people wanted to speculate that with the original light, we know one thing. Everything that was created in the Sheshis and Mebreshis, it says, Vayara Lakim Kitov, and God saw that it was good, and that's the way it was. But when it says Vayihar, it says Vayihchein, and it was. Vayihchein means, and it was for all time. But in the first creation, when it says Vayihar, it doesn't say Vayihchein. It just says Vayom Elokim Yihar, Vayihar, and it was light. And therefore, we say that that light wasn't forever, because that was the R that would be Lasid Lavo, and that was the R Hagonos that was hidden. And some people want to speculate, perhaps that was the Big Bang, as we like to call it in science, the initial explosion that created the world. You know, Barbanel points out, that being a very illogical person, that that would have been impossible as well, because when it says, Bereishis Bara Elokim, originally God created the heavens and the earth, so the first thing that was created was the heavens and the earth simultaneously. And then it says, but there was darkness. So if the world was created and there was still darkness, so that original light was not from the Big Bang, the light that was created after that. There's so many different things that we don't think about in terms of the miracles of creation. It also mentions all the things that were in creation and the order they were created. It doesn't even mention at all, there's a big machlokus as well, when were the angels created? Were they created as a helpmate to God? And right away, Chazal want to express the fact right away among the Rishonim as well that, of course, it wouldn't mention that the angels were created at all, because one might get the impression that the angels helped God in some way. We want to lose that thought from our consciousness to know that God created everything on his own. And Yeshmi Ayin, ex nihilo, and that is the very thing. And, of course, when we had today Simchas Torah, all these things that we're saying now, and if we're learning anything new, we finished the whole cycle of Chumash. We've been through a few years of learning the Chumash, but isn't it amazing that every year when we open up the Sefer Bereishis, we learn something new. Every year we read something we haven't read before. We have a thought that we haven't had before. We have a question we haven't had before, and we learn something. That is the purpose of a seim. We're making a party, because now that we've finished Zos HaBracha, we are ready to open up Sefer Bereishis and begin the Torah anew. Bring it up to in front of us again and see something for the first time as if we never saw it before, but with a greater understanding, since we've learned all the 54 parshas and now we've had a modicum of understanding, a little bit more each time, of all the avos of Moshe Rabbeinu, of all the Klal Yisrael, what they went through in the Midbar and all their trials and tribulations. And now we're ready to open up and say, Bereshis Bara Elokim, Eis HaShemayim V'Eis HaAretz. Let's start it fresh and see what happens. And that's what we do when we make a Siyum. We look at things with a fresh pair of eyes. So we contrast the lives of the people who lived in the first 1,000 years in Adam's time up to the time of Noah. They literally wasted all those years. It doesn't tell you almost anything except for a few musical instruments or anything. People just mark time. You see that in the world today. There are people who just go about marking time, live their lives one day at a time, and don't try to accomplish anything. They have no drive, no ambition to do anything. And then there are the people who are the doers who want to do. And that's what the Pasuk is trying to tell us. Look at the life of Moshe Rabbeinu. We finished that. And now we could understand the disappointment in God's eyes by Yinochem Hashem al Hara'ah. What does it mean that God really was disappointed? We don't like to think of God, or we can't, or we shouldn't even think of God as having this emotion if he knows everything beforehand. What was his intention? Was everything a test, or did he really know that things would work out so badly that he would have Yinochem Hashem Asher Asah? He's talking about the man, a man who's going through his life. He's living 500, 600 years and is accomplishing nothing. Vayinochem, the person who's alive, you know, a lot of people who want to end their life, they see their life is going nowhere and they just don't see the purpose of life. And that's what it says, Alibo, on the life and the hearts of man. They began to think to themselves, why am I here? Nothing is happening in my life and I'm not accomplishing anything. It wasn't that God was sorry that he created the world or that he created man, but the people that were living were sorry they were alive already. And that's what we want to avoid in our lives. May we use every single day, every single hour, every single minute of our day with some point that we're looking for the future. Bereshis, that base is always look ahead and see what can I accomplish today. Well, I always put my kids to bed at night when they were little and I said, what do you know today more than you knew yesterday? Every night I would say, did you learn something new? That's all you want. Whatever it is, whether it's in business, whether it's in Torah, whether it's whatever it is, are you smarter today than you were yesterday? Then your life is moving forward. If you just wasted the entire day being a couch potato, then your life is like the beginning of these people who lived 700 years and accomplished absolutely nothing. And then God had to start to diminish the lifespan until we see what it is today. And perhaps the reason God is allowing the lifespan to increase, because he sees production in the world, that there are so many things we see in the last 10, 20, 30 years, how many new things, how many things have change for the better in the world in terms of technology. It's an amazing thing from the first 1,000 years to the last 100 years, how many differences in the world are. We see every 10 years, every 5 years, the time change in terms of technology is staggering. Let us use our day for the betterment of the world. Thank you and have a good evening.